You're listening to DC Domination on the NovaStream Network, your weekly guide for the DC Comics universe. For all the latest on The Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow, keep it locked on novastream.com.au.
Hello and welcome once again to DC Domination Season 2 Episode 15, where we talk about all your DC TV, and by all of them, I mean only a few shows because we're human. My name is Brittany, and with me today we have Ryan.
Hey, man.
And we have Dylan.
Hey, man.
Now, we've got some pretty exciting news between the three of us. I mean, Ryan, something's happening. What is it, next Friday, next Saturday? What is going on in your life?
Yeah, next Saturday it's the weekend, and I'm looking forward to the weekend.
Long weekend! Woo!
Yeah, long weekend in Victoria. That's what we're excited about. We get Monday off. Woo!
But we're also excited this week about... Oh, wait a minute, what?
Just something else is happening. I don't know. Maybe I got my dates wrong.
Maybe.
Yeah. Something about church
what
bells.
What could it be?
Church
bells. A bit too traditional.
No church is anywhere near this wedding. Not even a little bit.
Not even near. Well, I'm excited for you. I think this is awesome.
Thank you.
And, you just gotta, when you love someone, you just gotta go out there and do something. Because you never know when something crazy is gonna happen.
Well, if we want anything from Legends of Tomorrow this week, it's love does crazy things.
Yeah, so your best friend can turn your back on you, or like what happened this morning. Here's another one of my car trouble stories, guys. I nearly had a head-on collision with a guy.
Awesome.
Whoa!
Yeah, driving along in this little like windy business area, I'm on the straightest part, and this guy, it's like before 7 o'clock, just starts to drift onto my side of the road. I'm thinking, oh, he's gonna change, he's gonna go back. Yeah, he's gonna go back. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he's not gonna go back. So I like, yep, tooted the heck out of my horn, because you know, Bible student right here. But yeah, that was terrifying. Have you guys had any terrifying moments like that?
Behind the wheel, like all the time. I'm a really bad driver.
If we were in the same state, I'd assume you were behind the wheel in the other car.
No, I'm pretty good.
Were you that far off the road? You were in my state.
Yeah, I was that far from my destination. I was supposed to like turn left
at Albuquerque.
Geelong, didn't. Queensland.
Yeah, Queensland. Nearly ran into Brittany. Whoops. And then there's Supergirl, who also had a run-in with something this week. She had a run-in with the mysterious Indigo, once known as Brainiac 8. Now, we're going to keep with the scores idea. Considering there's only two episodes this week, I guess you can say this episode came second, but also last. So, positive, but no.
I'm glad that it placed finally, because there was nothing else on.
Yeah, there's nothing else on. But it got an 8.3, though.
Nice silver medal, you suck.
Yeah, but 8.3. I mean, like, it probably would have gotten up there if it was amongst the other episodes.
Yeah, you say that, but we can't prove it.
No, we can't, which sucks. I mean, like, I'm not trying to be biased or anything. I'm just, like, what were the last week's ones? They were up in the eights, weren't they? Something like that.
Yeah, I think it was, like, on average, it was, like, an eight. I think it drifted, like, late eights, early nines.
Mm. Well, anyway, in this episode titled Solitude, a hacker steals information from a cheating website, like all these...
like Ashley Madison,
all these celebrities who are involved with other celebrities.
I'm looking for someone other than my wife.
Bow. Anyway, this isn't DC. We are going way off. I haven't even finished the first sentence
of
the
synopsis. It's not even PC.
No, it's not even PG. So anyway, this hacker asks Kat to release this information. The cat refuses, and the hacker disrupts the city's infrastructure by interfering with its computer systems. The hacker is revealed to be Indigo, or Brainiac 8, who was on Fort Roz, and who enabled Kara to escape the Phantom Zone. Her true plan is to destroy National City with, like, nuclear missile kaboomy boom, but her attempt is foiled by Supergirl, as always, because girl power! Meanwhile, Kara is still mad at Hank and refuses to return to the DEO, although she does eventually, only to be told by Alex that it was she. I've got that sentence way wrong. That it was Alex who killed her aunt. That was like Okay, I don't know how to pronounce this actress's name, so I'm going to just apologize ahead of time. Chyla Lee, who plays Alex.
Chyla Buff.
Not that one. But Alex was just phenomenal in the final scenes of this episode. Dylan, you just recently watched the episode. What did you think of that final scene?
That was an intense three-way hug / handhold.
Yeah, that's another way to look at it.
Yeah, no Chyla Buff in Transformers.
And you'd think that, like, just saying it out loud, it's such a just a stupid idea, three-way hug handhold, and yet I didn't think it felt corny at all.
I wanted him to come in for a big bear hug because he treats them like his daughters, so he wants a hug, you know he does.
It's still hard to, although she's told, Binkara's been told the truth, I think it would be hard to immediately just drop all anger or whatever that she might have had to Hank. I mean, she's still, I don't know, it's just kind of, she's probably also even asking for forgiveness from Hank. She's not, I don't know, I just felt like that scene was just a perfect representation of each of their characters and their motives.
Well, it was a nice moment because she told her that it was her that killed her aunt, and then she was like grumpy and stormed out, and then she stopped and then pulled her sisterly love and gave her a big hug, which is nice.
Which was beautiful. But now on to the not so beautiful costuming. Supergirl needs to pick up their costuming.
Supergirl personally or the show?
The show. Supergirl is fantastic.
Oh.
But, you disagree?
Yeah, no, Supergirl's good.
But Indigo, what was his name? Red Tornado, they just looked like really just bad cosplay.
You said it was Mystique in your review.
I likened it to a really bad cosplay of Mystique.
Yeah, it makes the show look like, when I think of like, hey, regular person, you should watch comic book shows. They're awesome now. That's what they picture in their head. Like, crappy-looking blue people with stupid hair fighting, even though they're, like, scientific virus things that go around doing kung fu. And they're just like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, like, it was just, it was such a really good idea because it wasn't just another villain for the sake of another villain. Like, she had a purpose in that she, Indigo, brought Fort Roz and Kara to Earth. And that was cool. The story was really cool. The idea of her controlling the internet, I know it's been done before, but it's still a really cool concept. But visually, what is the costume department doing? How does the producer okay that?
Yeah, they searched the internet and they found pictures like, someone dressed like this, it should be fine. Okay, I was looking at supernova.com and this seemed really good. Let's make this.
And they go, this would go perfect with our really awesome part where she stretches her arms out to open a double lock for a missile code.
What was that, like, Lance, I don't know, like that action
Stretch
figure?
Stretch Armstrong. Yeah.
My brother had one of them. That's what it makes me think of. But it just was really bad. And I want to love this show. I do. And it has these wonderful heart moments, like the moments with the sisters and Hank. And those are the moments I love this show for. But then it just does that.
Well, when you describe it as this week in Supergirl, Brainiac comes and uses AshleyMadison.com to find out who has the nuclear codes to blow up a city. I'm like, wow, that's relevant in the news? Like, what, 8 months ago, and it's like topical and it's action packed and it's going to be awesome, like Brainiac. How could you go wrong?
It's interesting though how on top of media Supergirl is. Like, they did it with sort of the mayoral candidate or the public politician person with the White Martian, how it kind of likened to Trump, let's be honest. I won't be
peachy
about it.
Yeah, but any dictator is going to appear like Trump.
Yeah, true. So we should just say dictator. She was likened to just this racial idea, racist idea.
Just a garbage person.
yeah, that just hates on everything that's not like them. But there was another one where James was questioning Kara's right to hold someone, like Max Lord, just because she has the power and she believes it's right, just because it's all in
Guantanamo
her.
Guantanamo Bay metaphor.
Guantanamo Bay. And it's really cool how Supergirl is on top of pop culture, like, well, not pop culture, but current media like that.
I think next week they're addressing the Y2K bug, so that should be topical. Right on the pulse.
Yeah. But, I mean, 8.3, I don't think this episode deserved that. So I don't think it's that good. Do you agree with that score, Dylan?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
5, maybe?
5. Ooh. I was a little more generous. I kind of gave it a 7 for that end scene, just because the acting was amazing.
Well, it wasn't a filler episode. At least things happened.
Yeah.
I'll give it that.
Yeah. But, well, that's Supergirl. And, I mean, watch it for those good moments between, like, you know, the whole... I'm actually starting to hate the term girl power, but it is. It's good for that. But also, because we only have 2 episodes to discuss this week, we're going to throw some other, just a little bit of ourselves into the mix, and we're going to discuss some comic books we've picked up recently. So we're going to jump over to Dylan to talk about his comic book to start off with. Dylan, what's your comic book?
First of all, they're called graphic novels.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Jesus, Brittany.
Yeah, I don't read comic books.
Like, why am I even here? This is horrible.
Exactly.
Just get rid of me. This is the medium. Bad. Sorry.
I'm not reading Mickey Mouse comic books. I'm reading a graphic novel, and it's a hardcover absolute edition from 2005, so you know that it's quality. I've been for a long time. This is the third attempt at trying to read Crisis on Infinite Earths. And every time I read it, I struggle. It is so dense, I guess is the word. So confusing, so muddled, and quote-unquote comic booky, where everybody is
so
like...
So that's right!
I mean, graphic novel-y.
Yeah.
In a comic booky way. There's just so many characters. I mean, I understand that it's the whole point of they've got these infinite universes and they're trying to narrow it down. And I understand all the principles of it and what everybody talks about it being so great and all these different things. But there's just so many weird characters that I don't know. Like, I've never heard of Psycho Pirate or Firebrand or Solovar or Firestorm. But there's, like, these variants of them as well. There's, like, Superman, but he's, like, the original Superman, like, not the modern-day Superman. And there's, like, a Gorilla Grodd-like character, but he's one of these spin-off characters. So I'm like, okay, that's kind of Gorilla Grodd. I can deal with this. Okay, that's Superman, but he's not doing anything Superman-like. And, like, Killer Frost is a main character, and Cyborg's a main character. I'm just, like... plodding through to try and get to, like, okay, that's Batman, I know Batman, that's Superman, I know Superman, I can relate to these people. And it's just all over the place.
I guess if you're not invested in a character, it's gotta make it even harder to get involved in a story.
Yeah, I need someone to guide me through and be like the eyes of me and
like
introduce me to the world. Anybody would be good. But yeah, it's a really tough read, and it's very like, we're superheroes. Yes, we are superheroes. Let's do super things because the world's going to end. Yes, it is going to end. How's it going to end? Well, we told you yesterday, but I'll tell you again because you're meeting a new person. It's like, get to the point. When is this going to end?
You understand why they do that, right? Because the whole idea being any single comic book can be someone's first comic book. So they tend to sort of rehash the plot on the first, like, 2 pages every time.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, characters who were in the last issue are saying the same things again. I'm just like, ugh.
So, I sort of just kind of wrapped up Convergence,
which
is very similar-ish. And there was a lot of that. There was a lot of, you know, remember when this happened? Like, yeah, it happened, like, in the issue that I just read. Like, okay, they're going over again for 4 pages. All right, cool. I'll skim these pages.
Mm. But that's one thing that's, like, some comic books, it's really good that they do a brief introduction of each of the characters and sort of the situation they're in at the very start. Graphic novel characters.
Thank you.
So, like, a few times when I picked up Birds of Prey, which is actually the comic book that I'm bringing to the table today, that's what they usually have at the start. This time they don't have that, which is interesting. But about Convergence, what have you taken from this graphic novel, Ryan? What are you loving? What are you hating?
Which one?
Convergence.
Oh, well, Convergence, I can't... So I read all of the singles, and I read the first four issues a couple months ago. And then when we were in Queensland, I was like, oh, these are on my iPad. Suppose I should read these. Look, it's the same, very similar to Crisis. It's dense. Like, it implies that you understand a lot of the multiverse that is DC. And sometimes there are some things that can get sort of lost in that. But it was all right. It was a pretty good story. But the one that I would recommend, that I'm kind of really keen to go back and read, actually, seeing as we're waiting an F long time for it to finish, is, as you may not know, I'm a bit of a Kevin Smith fan.
Really?
So, yeah.
who's a Smith fan? Okay.
Yeah, you wouldn't have guessed. So he wrote a couple of Batman books back in the day. He wrote one called Batman Cacophony and Batman the Widening Gyre. So I want to go back and read the Widening Gyre. It was supposed to be a 12-issue run. He's done 6 of them, and we've not heard anything since. Like, we've occasionally got some bit of art here and there. There was a really good splash page that came out last year, I think. But the downside is, so Kevin Smith wrote it, and the artist is his buddy Walt Flanagan, who's also in Comic Book Men, as well as Tell 'Em Steve Dave, and he's in quite a lot of things. So him and Kevin are both really, really busy at the moment. So I think majority of the scripts are written, but with Walt being as busy as he is, it's taking a while to get the rest of the books out. But this is quite a controversial book, actually. It was the first book, or the controversy for this book was it mentioned that Batman pissed himself once.
Did he piss himself or crap himself?
He had a bladder spasm is the exact, exact wording.
During the events of Batman Year One.
Yeah, during where a frigging room exploded in front of him.
Yeah.
So it's not a phenomenon, I guess. It's something. So if you're a firefighter and you are in intense heat, like your body just craps out and you literally pee your pants, like it just happens in the absolute heat of it, it happens. So, you know, Batman's trying to not relate but have a conversation with what could be the new hero of the town. His name's Baphomet, and he tells this story, and then the internet. Back then, the internet wasn't that... Well, it wasn't as strong as it is now, but people were all like, what do you mean you made Batman piss his pants? Batman doesn't piss his pants. It's awesome.
Batman's human, though.
Yeah, and, like that's what I loved about it. It was, you know... It was Batman's early days. He hadn't quite mastered everything yet, but, you know, like, he still... Like, he had a moment of weakness when he first started.
And I think happens. Those sorts of additions to these stories are amazing. Those little moments of, like... Just the human behind the gods, because that's what these heroes pretty much are. They're gods in these universes.
Mm.
And the fact that writers have taken, like Kevin Smith, have taken that bold step to just make him human, to take off that mask.
Bring him down a notch.
Yeah, and it's not even that. I mean, they're the same person. It's just that it allows us to see them in a different way. That everyone has that little...
moment where you pee yourself.
Where you pee yourself. I mean, like...
It wasn't even fear. It was just like it's a body... It's something you can't control. It just happens.
Involuntary reaction.
Yes, involuntary reaction. Yeah, reaction. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. But yeah, that's fantastic. That just shows Kevin as a writer. Kevin, can I call you Kevin? Kevin Smith as a writer. Just
Smitty.
Old Kev, as I call him.
Yo, okay, Smitty.
K-Dog, K-Smid.
Yeah. Just, yep, totally a gangster in another life, guys.
Yeah, I don't
claim
any of them things. Just give it to me.
It's a great testament to him as a writer. I just... you've got me intrigued, though, that he can do this on a... Like, no... Batman beat himself. I gotta read this comic. I mean, graphic novel.
The comic is really good. Walt Flanagan's art is kind of interesting. Some moments of it I really enjoyed, but then there were some other things that kind of didn't really work for me. An example is the Joker's in... He's in hospital for some reason. He's been there a while, so he's kind of got a bit of a beard. But the way the beard's drawn looks like he's got pubes stuck to his face. So it's a balancing act, I guess.
Yeah, it's hard when the art takes you out of the story when it's not streamlined. Like, I remember we talked about Suicide Squad a little while ago, and there was just one where Deadshot is just raging at some other character, and it was just some of the worst art I've seen in a graphic novel.
When the art has pretty much changed, like, 4 times on the same page.
Yeah.
That book was pretty bad.
But, well, one of my favourite graphic novels, and this one I think I purchased in Melbourne alongside Green Arrow Hunter's Moon, so both of them are great, and this one that I'm going to talk about is The Death of Oracle, which of course...
that's a comic book.
Oh,
that's definitely a comic book.
It obviously the title sucked me in. I was just like, oh my goodness, what, and I freaked out. But
yeah,
it's just like
die, right?
Sorry?
No, she doesn't die, right?
There's some crazy spoilers on the front of that cover.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the Birds of Prey have to come together on a mission to make the Calculator think that Oracle is dead, because he's getting close to finding... He has actually previously found out who Oracle is, but Oracle had figured out a way to delete his memories so that he's back to square one. Because he saw his mind like a computer. That's how she was able to do that. But... Like, that's just great. Like, her mission to do this shows how much she is sort of like Batman, in that she has to do some things at all costs. I mean, what happens to Black Canary, one of her closest friends in this universe, is insane. Like, do you know what Dinah Lance has gone through? Like, it's just insane. It's one of those comic books just deal with it. It's one of those comic book stories that it just messes with you. Like, how can someone write that? It's
to
dark.
The people at home, what exactly happened?
Yeah,
what
we've
moved you so much?
Heads up.
Well,
I have, of course, but the people at home might not have.
It's just really dark. Like, she gets kidnapped and tortured to the point where she can't have children, and it messes with her relationship with Ollie to the point where I think it is the cause that they actually divorce. And it's sort of their relationship, as they're trying to mend past this, is hinted at in Hunter's Moon. But then it comes to the death of Oracle, where one villain has the power to bring up all your greatest regrets in life. And so this person is bringing up how she and Oliver broke up, how the Red Arrow Arsenal almost blamed... This is how she sees the things, how Red Arsenal blames her for missing an arm, for him to be missing an arm, how Sin... I'm not sure what happened to her. Like, Black Canary at one point adopted a little Asian girl, and I'm assuming she died, but it's just like this dark insight into Dinah. It's crazy. But another positive thing is that Barbara Gordon is actually wearing Batman pajamas.
Uh-huh.
So that's cool.
What year was this made?
So this was... Heck, when was it? 2011.
Ooh, that's pretty cool.
But it also has some like pretty creepy villains as well. Have you guys heard of Junior?
No.
She's the daughter of Ragdoll.
Ooh.
So not the one that's in like the one I know of is the one with red hair and check pants and stuff. But that's, I think, her brother. Her dad is one from, like, ages ago, who's in, like, this green jumpsuit and crazy mask and stuff. But she is crazy and unnerving to the point that I would put her on psychotic level with the Joker. And you guys know how I feel about the Joker. The Joker creeps me out.
You love clowns.
Duh. Yeah, it doesn't help she wears a mask as well. It's sort of like a potato sack, but it's just creepy. It's almost scarecrow-esque. But she also, like, Oracle has just heard rumors about her, and Oracle is like the Justice League Queen of Data. She's heard rumors that Junior was some awful prodigy that ran the entire West Coast crime syndicate with nothing but a phone and a notepad.
Ooh.
But, yeah.
Is it a notepad as in one you write on, or a notepad as in one of those tablets?
Nothing technological, because Oracle would be able to easily figure out about her and
true,
stuff. So it was just,
that's,
just a paper.
That's even cooler then.
So it's just, I mean, if you guys delve into her past, it is creepy as anything. Have you guys ever come across any villains, like, apart from the Joker, that just kind of creep you out? I remember Onomatopoeia you brought up once, Ryan?
Yeah, Onomatopoeia, which is a character that was created by Kevin Smith in his Green Arrow Sounds of Silence run, and also appeared in Batman Cacophony.
Mm. Like,
actually, no, I lie. Yes. Either way, he appeared in White and Jaya, funny enough.
The one you like?
Yes. Well, I like both of them, really, but...
Yeah. But yeah, Dylan, what about you? Do you have any, like, just terrifying villains?
Superman.
Superman. Oh, my goodness, he's horrible.
He is Batman's ultimate villain because he is the opposite of everything Batman stands for, and that scares me.
It's Batman's Bizarro.
Yeah, he is. He's about truth, justice, and the American way. But what about the rest of the world, Clark? What about the rest of the world?
So true. I mean, hey, Superman does fix the Great Wall of China.
Yeah, with his, like, telekinesis vision or some crap.
Something crazy.
Yeah.
Well, just touching on the world of movies, let's jump over to some news. Now, the news this week is actually to do with Vertigo Comics, which is a subsection of DC, and it's about the Sandman film, and it's bad news. Sad noise here. Aww. Unfortunately, Joseph Gordon-Levitt has dropped out of the project due to creative differences when New Line, a Warner Brothers subsidiary, took over the project. Among other things, he tweeted that, "I came to realize that the folks on at New Line and I just didn't see the eye to eye on what makes Sandman special and what a film adaptation could or should be. So unfortunately, I decided to remove myself from the project. I wish nothing but the best for the team moving forward." Now, I haven't delved into the Sandman universe, I'll be completely honest. So, is this bad news? Like,
It's interesting news from what, because Sandman would be really interesting to see, and I can't wait to see it. But Joseph Gordon-Levitt was a big advocate for this. You know, he was one of the people pushing it forward. Like, he was not just directing in it; he was starring in it. And
he was the Ryan Reynolds to Deadpool as to what he was to
Sandman.
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah. Put it simply.
Ouch.
So that's why it is a bit of a kind of oh shit, okay, but. You know, is it creative different? Like, from what we've heard, it appears that with New Line and New Line had an idea of what they think Sandman should be. He disagreed, and they couldn't sort of meet in the middle, I guess.
Mm.
Which sucks, but these things happen, really.
Yeah, I mean, like, if we can get We've had a lot of superheroes from the Marvel Universe, and they are amazing movies, don't get me wrong. They've made a formula, though. They all fit to the formula. But it's just really... Personally, I think Guardians and Deadpool are the ones that seem to have carved their own little spots, if you know what I mean. Like, it's something different from the formula.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, Sandman isn't... It really shouldn't be treated as a conventional, you know, movie, because it really isn't. Like, yeah. It's not a conventional superhero. That's not what it's going to be.
That's
it
what
would
I
work
worry.
Better as Netflix kind of thing. Netflix.
I think it would have been, yeah.
That's why, like, I was kind of hoping that they would do that. They'd take it away like Deadpool and make it... Well, not R-rate like Deadpool, but have someone passionate about it and know about it and not make it like the other movies.
They did. They had that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'd have to do it R, I think, because there's a lot of adult content in
there. Yeah, it's like very Preacher in that sense.
Yeah. Depending on how Preacher goes and if that's a success. I mean, with Walking Dead, it's been a success. Now Preacher... then yeah, it might be best to do it as like a TV series, which would be pretty epic. Because it's not a conventional hero story kind of thing. It's not a superhero movie per se. It's more of like this... Am I still here?
Yeah.
It's more of some... this weird dreamlike fantasy, gothic horror blended with like crime. It's awesome, but yeah, it doesn't lend itself well to like a popcorn movie. If there's box office involved and like people are going to have to pay to see an event movie and go out to the cinemas, it's not that. But if it's like this amazing show you watch for 12 episodes and you have to tell everybody out and it turns into like a Breaking Bad, then yeah, I think it'll get a following.
Yeah, look, I'd like. I don't know where they would go with it. It sucks, but
let's just hope that what is this, this group New Line has someone that's passionate about it on their team. I mean,
well, see, New Line do sort of do weird movies. Like that's what they do. So it's kind of interesting that they had the creative difference. But I guess the I would say the pre-expectation given by. Yeah, by those other movies, by other superhero movies, might have sort of tainted the process.
Which is a shame. Maybe we should have some, like, because not all graphic novels or comic books are heroes. Maybe we should create that definition to allow these.
Well, they are slowly doing that. With, yeah. You know, if it all comes like with Walking Dead's comic book, and it's incredibly popular, but it came out at a time where zombies were massive. So. Yeah. It's tough. We have to hope Preacher goes really well.
Well,
pray.
Yeah, pray. Thinking of another TV show, the coming in number one in tonight's DC Domination lineup, we have Legends of Tomorrow, the only other TV show we had to review this week. Woo! So, Legends, episode 1, season 7, titled Marooned, got an 8.5. Which...
8.5? That's pretty...
Pretty generous for this episode.
Really? Yeah. I wrote down what I thought it should have before I looked it up. And I actually said 8.5, and I'm like, oh, hell yeah! I completely agree.
Wow, generous.
Yeah, I'm a nice person. Just sometimes.
We can tell you're nice by the over
sarcastic voice.
Yes. So, Ryan, give us a rundown. What happened on Marooned?
Rip needs to upgrade Gideon's software to locate Vandal Savage and seizes his opportunity when he finds another ship that is sending out a distress call. Rip, Stein, Jefferson, and Mick board the ship but are attacked and imprisoned by Time Pirates, who, when they fire upon the Wave Rider, Sarah and Snart are locked in a breached hull of the... What? Sarah and Snart are pretty much locked into a room with a breached part of the wall, hence cold crap coming in, and they're kind of stuck there while they're slowly losing oxygen. While Palmer tries to fix it, Snart reveals his history with Mick. Mick then betrays the team and helps the pirates take over the Wave Rider. But they are stopped as the team leap into action when Rip pulls a maneuver from his cadet days. Not so very subtle foreshadowing. The captain of the stolen ship then helps Rip to update the Wave Rider. Snart then takes care of Mick so he doesn't betray his team again by leaving it a little bit open.
I liked this episode.
It was an episode. I don't think it propelled the plot much further. I liked, so it sort of tackled more. What I am enjoying that they're slowly putting more thought into, like, Snart and like, their relationship. I think that's really good. Because, like, you know, I do love those characters from Prison Break, so I do love them in this. And they're giving him a nice bit of heart.
Yeah, definitely. Like I've said before, I was worried about Snart and his campiness, but he's just, yeah, he's definitely gotten heart, definitely owning that character. Is someone erasing something? Erasing Greylet?
Or someone, like, filing their nails?
Filing their nails?
All I'm hearing is...
Okay. I hear it. It's the door. The Slender Man wants to come in. No! Go away! Shoot!
Oh my goodness, don't you hate it when Slender Man wants to come in?
Shoot, Slender Man!
And you're just trying to follow your nails, and he's like, hey, man. Like, no, come on! I'm trying.
Oh god, he's behind me now.
Oh no, you know too much.
Yep, don't look at him, don't look at him.
Go on, Jenny Craig's, you get out of here. Sorry, continue.
Probably the biggest downfall I had about this episode was the fact that Kendra and Ray totally were just like, I love you, let's kiss and make out.
Like, literally, who the hell cares?
It's just like...
Anytime Kendra comes on the screen, I instantly check my phone because I just stop caring. Because
that's all the writers seem to have for her. Like... Sure, let's just say we pair her up with Cisco, then we pair her up with Carter, then we pair her up with Ray Palmer, and a possible Jax in the middle. I mean, like, whatever, do that. But add something else to her story. Just her story.
But her story has nothing to begin with anyway. Her entire story is defined by her falling
in... I was a barista 3 months ago.
Yeah, her entire story is defined by her falling in love with that jerk that's dead. I've said this before, but there is nothing to her character. So the only thing they can do is use her lady parts for the story. See, like, Sarah is an incredibly fleshed out character, and that's strong and independent. She doesn't need to have a concern about being a love interest for the show. Like, that's not what she is. She's become bigger than that. And that's what's great about her. And can they kill her too? Can they kill Kendra? Like, as a twist to make Vandal Savage more like strong, just so she goes away for a couple episodes?
They need a hawk person to actually kill Vandal. But is Mick dead?
No.
Dead Arrow?
Dead Arrow.
What do we think? Like, they have gone, every time someone's died, they've buried Baby Hawk, who's really old man, archaeologist kind of guy Hawk. They buried Carter, and it's all in this foresty area, like, when they go to kill Mick as well. Where is this time?
It doesn't matter, because they were in the same holding cell they were in last week, but on a different ship, apparently.
Yeah, that was Mick's holding cell last week when he tried to run into it and got hit by the force field.
Well...
With a slightly greener light this time around.
It is almost like, I guess, a defense force, but for time. So I guess they have, like, a standard ship and a standard design, maybe.
Or they only have four sets.
Whoa, I didn't think of that. I was going with the sets, and then you sold me on it. I was just like, no.
I'm never questioning this show again. Britain
same
has
kind
saved
of
it.
Ship. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm giving that.
Boom. I don't know, the hyperspeed was different from usual. Like, instead of just going straight through the stars, it kind of twisted, which I thought was pretty cool. I mean,
you know what I think wasn't really cool was the very obvious I'm just pressing nothingness of Rip Hunter when he's about to at the start of it, he's like, alright, everyone sit down. Beep, 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 beep.
He's just like punching the keys.
I'm just gonna press anything. Well, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, see, like, that's the best thing. Sometimes Felicity looks like she's genuinely typing.
Mm.
Sometimes she looks like she's a mess. Rip Hunter looks like a mess when he's near any control panel.
It's just like, he may as well just, like, ball his hand into a fist and just punch it.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm just gonna press this with the bottom of, my hard part of my palm. I'm just gonna smack it on this table. And apparently it does things.
Yeah, but there was a bit of a name drop. I mean, we had Kanjaro in this episode.
Yeah,
it's cool.
That squid dude from Green Lantern First Flight that was really boring.
It's like the space gangster or something or other. I'm completely wrong, aren't I?
No, it's the one that Sinestro was chasing down, who was voiced by Dr. Stein in that First Flight movie. And then he was murdered. Yeah.
In green blood.
It was nice to see a little bit more behind the scenes, a bit of history for Rip, and to hear a little bit of history for Snart and Mick. I mean, that was very interesting. If I could say interesting another time, I probably would.
That is an interesting thing to say, Brittany.
Mm. Did it intrigue anyone?
Are you forgetting that the Atom died as well this episode?
Yeah, for like a second. Yeah, like
still counts.
See, this is the worst thing. This is when you know a character's a piece of crap, because when Adam is all like space dead, we're like, oh god, she's gonna kiss him and bring him back to the power with the power of love. And then like that song would play, power of love, like that's what it looked like it was going to be. Instead he just punched her in the chest, which is really good. But then they made it anyway. Balls riding, dudes.
Yeah.
God damn
like,
it.
I mean, it was cool. Like, I think her actress is getting better at fighting, I guess, in the fight scenes.
But... Oh, no, she's not, because, like, she has powerful, like, she has powerful wings and scratchy hands, from what we've learned on previous episodes. She didn't, no wings, no scratchy hands, she hid in a corner and sort of punched a dude.
Well, I think it's better than what she had been doing. I mean, she looked very uncomfortable in other sparring episodes.
Congratulations, was there slightly more than last time. Nice participation award there, Ken.
Oh, I gotta love those participation awards.
But I hate her. She's a horrible character.
Well, at the same time, we really picked on Thea in season 1 and 2. Yeah, and how cool is she now?
Yeah, she was balls. She's really good now.
Let's just hope the same thing happens. I just want to, like, I don't want to wait, like, 50 million
seasons.
Yeah, but
Willa Holland is actually an excellent actress. This chick is not. You know what I mean? Like, Willa Holland, I'm like, look, she's got potential, but the writing's bad. For her, I'm like, I don't see it.
It's not happening. I just think if they mentioned that she was a barista, and, like, I know we say barista. I was, like, a barista 3 months ago, and now I'm, like, a goddess? Honey, you were always a goddess,
but
you
didn't
know.
But at the same time, I used to always give Sarah shit, too, because she used to just sit there with her mouth open. But now she does sit there with her mouth open, but she's cooler now for some reason.
She's made it fashionable.
No, she's just... I guess when majority of the cast of that show is anus, like, it's nice. Even with her mouth open, she's still doing a better job.
So then, like, just, I guess, if you're complimenting Snart and you're complimenting Sarah, did you like their little, I guess, heart-to-heart?
I did think they were going to bang too, but they didn't, which was nice.
I think that's good. They need more,
I guess... I like that. I mean, that was awesome.
Opposite
that
gender
was just,
relations.
Yeah, it was
just wait until next week.
Yeah, next week they'll be like, it'll be frozen.
There's already a love triangle, so there'll be like, I don't know, something else there.
But yeah, it was just a nice moment, like nice personal moment between
friends.
Two peoples.
Yeah.
Well, not, they weren't friends.
Oh, yeah,
like,
true.
They straight out said they hated each other, so there's that.
I do like that. I do like that they hate each other, but they're just honest.
Like, just convenience, we're going to like snuggle.
However, I am still very much impressed by the Ripped Hunters actor. Gosh, I can't remember his name at the very start. Arthur Darvill, as he watches the hologram of his family.
Yeah, they're not so subtle. Oh, yeah, I'm just doing work. Stein should have been like, I'm just going to wait.
Yeah, clearly you're not working. You're talking holograms of your family. Whatever.
Like, you're having a clear moment. I'm going to be like, hey, man, it's been a week. A little bit bored.
You don't have a door or a wall to your room.
Yeah, it's like, hey, heads up. Like, you should get a door for this room if you're going to sit here and cry.
Perhaps not a glass wall.
Why doesn't he travel back in time to the day before they were killed, pick them up, bring them on the ship, and then still try and fight Vandal Savage, knowing the next day that the world's going to end at his hands?
See, the problem is, I believe that he has actually caused this by... ever so slightly dropping his name, dropping his family's name, and then losing his watch to Vandal Savage.
That's what they're implying.
Yeah.
Oh.
They're implying that in episode one, he just kills, like, initially it appears he just kills them at random.
Hmm.
But when later on we find out in the story that no, he was aware of who they were, this is where time is dumb, and time travel is incredibly crazily brain-hurting. Because, you know, he wouldn't have killed them if he didn't know who they were, and he wouldn't have known who they were unless Rip went back in time as a result of the first thing. Time travel's effed.
So I guess we can only assume that this season, the characters are probably going to fail, and Vandal Savage will stay alive.
But that's the thing. In terms of longevity of this show, how long are they going to stretch out Vandal Savage? Like, is he going to be the villain for the next 6 seasons?
Then they'll bring in Damien Dark, and it'll just be weird.
as boring.
Yeah.
Are there any other immortal villains? I mean, Raz is already gone. don't know. Anyway, on that note, we should be gone. My name is Brittany. You can find me here, and you can find me on the YouTube channel for Who's Who. With me is Ryan.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does the show.
Oh, the pop, to the pop culture.
Just the pop culture. Which is pretty good. I mean,
it's a YouTube show.
It's a YouTube show. It's pretty entertaining.
It's a thing.
And then also we have Dylan.
Hi.
Hi. And you can also find him
on DC Domination weekdays on Tuesdays and Marvelous Daredevil season 2 coming soon.
Looking forward to it.
So listen to us, watch us, because we're amazing, entertaining people. Woo woo! May all universes be good ones, and may I never say woo woo ever again.
You're listening to DC Domination on the NovaStream Network, your weekly guide for the DC Comics universe. For all the latest on The Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow, keep it locked on novastream.com.au.